Hello and welcome to the Terry and Sarah Show. You're listening to Dark City Radio with the Terry and Sarah Show. Our show is, like we said last week, is about conversations of inspiring each other into wellness and wholeness, and how we do that and what inspires us on an individual basis or in a group basis to actually take steps for our wholeness and wellness, for our individual wellness and the wellness of our environment around us as well.
Yep, that's what we're doing this time. Last week, we after our show was posted up on YouTube, we had a comment, and I did try to go on and to just respond to it, but I couldn't work out how to do it. I'm a bit of a Luddite at this sort of thing. So Sarah and I had a good chat about it, and we thought it would actually be really useful to just, you know, to talk about it now. So I hope you're listening, and thank you very much for your comment. And what I've done is I've just scrawled it down, so I hope I've got it right. And you said, like the premise of your show, would be nice to get to specifics instead of generalities and conversation. For example, what herbs are good for what, how to grow them, what foods are good for what, constructive criticism, peace and love. And that really, you know, that got us sort of thinking on a number of levels. And really, you know, when we sort of talked about it, we really then started to kind of really sort of zoom in on what it was. You know, we wanted this, you know, this show to be about. And it was really useful for us to kind of clarify for ourselves what the program's about. And it did prompt a couple of really sort of thoughtful exchanges, not just talking, you know, between ourselves, but also with other people. And what we did decide, I think, and what it did clarify for us, was that what we really wanted to do here was to explore what inspires people to well-being, and the journey they embark on, as opposed to specific sort of therapeutics and advice on the types of support they choose as their, you know, during their well-being journey. And particularly as a herbalist, I'm really aware, and maybe, you know, some people are less aware, that there's a huge amount of information on herbs, on their therapeutics, on how to grow them, how to make herbal medicines, how to dispense it, which is really readily available in books or online. And it's, you know, it's fantastic. It really is. It's fantastic. But most importantly, for me, is the journey of discovery that's inherent in this becoming well. And that most people, we found out, Sarah and I have had this discussion today, that most people find the question of what inspired them very, very, very difficult to pin down. And that in itself, kind of that question in itself opens up a dialogue to sort of introspection and mindfulness about why we do what we do and what motivates us, you know, in this journey, in this path. So rather than talk about specifics, if somebody phones up and, you know, and joins in our conversation and they're, you know, they're very enthusiastic about, you know, something that has inspired them, maybe, you know, a particular herb or something that they've done, then that's fantastic. That's really, you know, that would be beautiful and wonderful to, you know, to talk about and to, you know, to further kind of, you know, to further investigate and explore. But to, you know, to just, I suppose, for me to talk about herbs, it is, you know, it's something that I think is, you know, there's lots of that information out there. So I only really, you know, Sarah and I have shared this conversation, and, you know, I hope that, you know, that is, that makes some sense to you, and it sort of clarifies things for other people as well, who may be listening and thinking, what on earth are they talking about again? They seem to be going over the same stuff again and again. But yes, we're not experts. We're not experts really on anything. And this is about not being an expert or knowledgeable. This is about trying to, you know, to explore and be honest. And I'm sure Sarah's got...
Yeah, it's about exploring what you find good for you and learning to trust yourself, really, I suppose, is what we want people to do, is actually learn to trust their own selves, learn to trust their own instinct, you know, and what guides them to specific things. There's loads of different healing, I don't really like the word healing, but there's loads of different healing practices out there, isn't there? There's loads of different herbs you can get, and what works for one person might not work for another person. What feels right for one person wouldn't feel right for another person. And what we really want to find out is what inspires people to do different things, to discover things for themselves, and what's led them down the path that they've walked down, and how they've got to where they've got to. It's simple little things have inspired me along the way. One occasion that sticks in my head is one day when I was feeling really miserable, arguing with somebody, and this is quite a few years ago, and feeling really down about it and hard done by, and then just looking at somebody and they smiled at me, and I'll always remember that because it just made everything go, and me just remember, well, no, actually, I don't want to be involved in this. I don't want to be arguing with this person about stuff that doesn't even really matter. There's so much more to life. There's loads of lovely people out there. You know, it just reminded me of how many lovely people there are out there. And if you don't get on with somebody, sometimes it's not always best to hang out with them. If you can't sort out your issues, then sometimes you need to just have a break from somebody. And there is so many nice people out there. And that's what that smile reminded me of. And that smile inspired me to feel good about myself again, to feel strong about myself again. And then it reminded me of the fact that there is lots of lovely people there in the world.
Yeah, there are. And it's, I mean, I think one of the things about sort of the conversation that we're having is that it's not kind of pinning things down. It is about, you know, saying that what, you know, this journey is very, very varied, that, you know, that how we reach certain parts of it and the knowledge that we kind of gain with that, you know, for one person is going to be very, very, very different to somebody else. I mean, when I first met you, Sarah, you were involved in energy work, and you call it energy work. You don't call it energy healing, and you don't like the word healing. And I've always thought of it as energy healing. And that, I'm sure, is, you know, part of your journey. So for me, I'd be really interested to know, why energy work rather than...
Well, because learning energy work for me was a big eye-opener for me, and it facilitated a lot of things for me about taking responsibility for myself and how I feel about things and the effects I have personally on my life and how I've got myself to this situation or to that situation. And it opened up so many doors for me in an amazing way. And at first, yeah, I thought, yeah, I want to be a healer. I want to, and then I'd see people and I think, oh, yeah, I want to be the person that makes that person better. I'm going to heal that person. And then I'd end up getting myself in lots of bother by hanging around with people and thinking, I'm going to be able to help this person. I'm going to be able to save this person. And inevitably, it all backfire on me, and I'd end up thinking, oh my God, what's going on? All I did was try and help them, and it's all just blown up in my face. What have I done to deserve this? And then it's like, hang on, we'll take a step back, Sarah. What has caused this situation? And it's me thinking that I have got the ability to heal people, me thinking that I've got the ability to go into other people's lives and say, I'm going to make it better, when I have not got that ability. The only person who has got the ability to make themselves better is them. And if you think that you are the one that's going to be doing this and you're the one that's going to be doing that, inevitably it doesn't actually work out, because It has to be a personal thing. It has to be a personal person taking responsibility for their health, for themselves. And, you know, I don't personally like it if I think somebody's in my life thinking that they're going to be able to help me. They're going to be able to point me on the right direction, because we're all here learning our own lessons and learning our own paths and walking our own paths. And, you know, obviously if people ask you questions and they want a bit of advice or a bit of support, for a bit of advice, well, then you can share what knowledge you do have with them and hopefully point them into a direction of where they can improve their health or do things for themselves. You know, I just don't think that anyone has got the power to do that, and that's why I call it facilitating, because I might say something to somebody and that might trigger something within them, or I might give them a bit of energy or whatever it might be, and that might trigger something within them, you know. And I think that's the best way of looking at it. It's all about empowering people to be able to stand in their own power and facilitating that within each other. It's not about somebody taking control and being the healer in the situation. It's like you say, yourself, Terry, when you have people coming to see you, you learn so much off them and they learn so much off you, and it's a mutual exchange. And that's the way I like things to be. I know it doesn't work otherwise. And I when I was younger, I did actually try and help loads of people and really get upset and disheartened by the whole thing.
Yep. I think that's it's a really important distinction, actually. There are a lot of people that will call themselves energy healers, and I'm sure that they would identify very clearly with what you're saying, that they see themselves as a facilitator and they see themselves as that there is an exchange of energy rather than it being something that they're kind of imposing on someone. But I think that the whole thing about language is really important. And there was one quote that I wrote down, because I was in that position of actually thinking about something like being alone. And I was in the house the other day on my own. And, oh, it was just blissful. And before people come sort of for their appointments, what I like the house to be is really, really calm, everything really grounded. And, you know, things are kind of clean. There's fresh water. There's, you know, usually some plants or something around. You know, it's just that really calm, quiet. And I've got a burner on and I'll have some lavender and camphor or eucalyptus, you know, those really beautiful cleansing and sort of stimulating essential oils, maybe a bit of rose geranium in there, which, you know, really lifts things and is just about joy. And, you know, when I sit in this space, I feel really grounded, and I know this is something we're going to move on to, but also I can just sense that kind of that clarity around me, that peace. And it's a lovely space for somebody to either sit in, for me to sit in, or for someone to walk into. And I was minded, because, you know, before I get too kind of, you know, patting myself on the back about, you know, this space that I've kind of created, about I just came upon this quote. And I don't know who this quote is. I've got absolutely no idea. But it says, language has created the word loneliness to express the pain of being alone, and the word solitude to express the glory of being alone. And it really was one of those sudden kind of sort of just being suddenly made really aware that I have, you know, this wonderful privilege of being in my home and of being of having solitude in my home. But I know that if the things which are really important to me, which hold me and ground me, you know, if my husband and my boy suddenly weren't here for a reason, not just that they've gone out for the day, that this is wow, this is like peace, but if they weren't here, that this wouldn't be, you know, there wouldn't be this, you know, this beautiful, calm clarity. You know, this would be loneliness. And it's this
interpretation that we have, the language that we have, and how powerful language is in everything that, you know, everything that surrounds us. Even talking now on this show, I'm really minded that, you know, that everything I say, because no one can see my face, or you know, no one really knows me, you know, that they may be taking what I'm saying in a kind of different way. And that is, you know, it's quite scary, and quite, you know, it feels like quite a responsibility. So I have to keep bringing myself back to the fact that this is a conversation, that this is about, you know, exploration, and it's not, again, about us being, you know, the person who's saying, oh, this is right or this is wrong. It's about us exploring. And so Sarah's kind of her thing about energy work as opposed to energy healing has massive sort of implications and importance. Well, it does, yeah, it does, as far as, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But I'd also, I'm really, really interested, because although we have talked about these things, about how, you know, your journey, I think, yes, your journey, your path needs to be brought to the table now, Mistress Sarah. And yeah, how did you get to energy healing? And I knew you were heading, you know, to being a herbalist, and here you are as this, you know, wonderful energy worker, work person.
Well, I learned how to do energy work in about 1998, I think it was. And it was Shambhala multi-dimensional healing, that energy work that I actually started doing. But originally, ever since I was a kid, I've always sort of thought, oh, this world's not always a very nice place, you know. Surely there's something better out there. Surely there's a way we can all work together and make this world a better place. And I had all these feelings ever since I was a child, and what could I do to make a difference, or what can I do to actually have a more positive input into the world? And so I've always sort of looked at it like that, and I've studied environmental stuff, and I wanted to do what I can with the environment and take responsibility for myself there, and, you know, and just make a better world, really. And so then I was... then I learned more and more about spiritual stuff and about ghosts. I always believed in ghosts and spiritual beings and this, that, and the other. And then so I am, and so I always sort of looked at life a bit from that kind of an angle, you know, an alternative angle. What you can't see doesn't mean that it's not there, you know. What you can feel is just as important as what you can see or what you hear. It's just a valid thing. And so that I learned more about spiritual healing, and that didn't quite ring up with me, didn't quite fit for me. And then I was in a biology class once, and one of my teachers was doing Reiki. And I thought, oh, this is quite good. And I was looking into that. I thought, oh, this looks quite interesting. And then as I was looking around, one of my old friends, a friend of my mum's, and she used to look after me as a child as well as a baby, and she actually did Shambhala, and she said, no, you don't want to learn Reiki. There's lots of rules, there's lots of regulations, and it's not quite really, you'd be better suited to what I'm doing. And she said, there's somebody, I know somebody in your area, which is Brighton at the time, who is actually teaching and running class workshops. So you could join that. And it all just sort of rolled into one. It all just sort of clicked into place. Just as I was looking, she was on the phone, and it all felt really right to be able to do it. And so that's what I did. I went off and I learned Shambhala number one. It was broken up into different, it was 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's different now when I first learned. And so that's how I first started learning. And then I also realized, got taught how important it is about what you think and what you put out there, really. So I followed my heart into it, and that's how I ended up learning how to do Shambhala. And it's actually an amazing, amazing technique that has served me throughout, ever since I've done it, throughout everything I've ever gone through since that point. It has given me such a comfort, and to know that there's more to life. There's more to life than just black and white. There's more to life than just what you see around you. And And I can actually sit there, I can feel the energy, I can feel the love, I can feel it filling my heart, I can feel it spreading out all around the world. And I know that I'm making a difference by sitting there and doing that. I can feel the air around me, I can feel the energy around me changing and raising in vibration, and it's just absolutely amazing. There is going to be a link of the energy work that I do put up on our YouTube page as well. It's called Paradigm now. It's no longer called Shambhala. And it goes up to 13D now. And I've done all of them up to 13D. I haven't done the teachers. I haven't done any of it for quite a while, actually. I do it all the time, every day, but I haven't done it officially for quite a while.
Wow. That's just, is that your doggy in the background?
Yeah, I just got to go and let the dog in.
You go and let the dog in. I thought the dog was becoming increasingly inspired then, starting to go crackers. That was, so we've got Shambhala and Paradinium, which is, well, I think it's, I know nothing about it. I have to say, I know absolutely nothing about this type of energy work, although I know that one of the things that we've been talking about around energy work is, and in fact around all well-being, is that, you know, and it keeps coming back to it, and keep trying to draw it away from it, but it keeps coming back to grounding. And, you know, I was just looking at one of my lovely books, and I was thinking about, you know, thinking, I was really trying to pin down for myself what on earth is, you know, happening with this, you know, what's inspiring. And this book, which I really love, and I just picked up the back of it, and it says on the back, this is a pharmaceutical silent spring. And I'm minded from when I was, it must have been about sort of 13, I think. And Sarah as well, talking about, you know, her biology teacher, is that I had to do a project. We all had projects at school, and I picked up this Silent Spring book by Rachel Carson. It's probably one of the only books I can remember from that far back that really, you know, that really meant something to me, apart from Lord of the Rings, of course, but that's another story. But this Silent Spring, and it was Rachel Carson, was talking about the effects that pesticides were having on our planet. And it was just, you know, it was the most awful, kind of devastating thing to read about as, you know, as a young person. And it really, really did, you know, I you know, for this, you know, this project, I decided that I was going to look at what was in our shops. And I went around all the gardening shops, as they were, then little hardware stores, and just categorized, you know, and logged all the different pesticides that we were putting, you know, into our gardens. And I did this piece of work, and, you know, and I was quite, you know, I was quite horrified by it, really. I was quite, you know, overwhelmed. I was at that age where things really do, you know, you become very passionate. But then I sort of moved on. But I realized when I started reading this book by Stephen Harrod Bruner, I think is how you pronounce it, which is called The Lost Language of Plants, which is about the ecological importance of plant medicines to life on Earth, that in fact this had really, you know, really followed me throughout all of my life, this sort of sense of that, you know, that we, that our kind of body and our mind and our spirit are intimately connected to the health and well-being of the planet. But also the other wonderful thing about this guy Stephen is when he talks about plants, he won't say, right, you know, this is a plant and these are its kind of chemical constituents, and, you know, this is how much of it you would use, and you know, it's hot or it's cold, or, you know, it's an astringent. You know, what he says is, you know, what is your relationship with this plant? What does this plant mean to you? And he has a series of exercises in this book, which aren't just about, you know, learning how to kind of communicate with nature spirit. It's about really being mindful and being observant and expanding this, you know, this way we have of communication. And he has these 10 exercises, and they're beautiful. And I was thinking as I was going through them again today that they are probably some of, you know, it's quite an intense experience that he's building up. But in terms of grounding and pulling you back to the ground and pulling you back to nature and nature spirit and to, you know, to being in that absolute moment and really meticulously sort of feeling and thinking about every single thing that's going on, whether it's a small hair that's, you know, that's just kind of risen on your hand or something like that. It's just very intense and in-depth relationship with a plant, which, you know, for most people is like, whoa, well, that's a bit kind of weird. But I know Sarah's going to sort of introduce some more of her thoughts on grounding now, hopefully the dog's in and I snuggled up at her feet.
Yeah, the dog's in, bless him. He doesn't like being outside in the garden for too long. I don't know why, but I think he's a bit of a pampered pooch, so I've been told. But yeah, grounding. Well, this is it really is a subject that me and Terry are actually going to probably go back to time and time and time and time again in our radio show, because it is so important. And once I did actually learn about grounding and learn how to ground and all that, when I started doing my energy work, and I also do crystal stuff as well, I actually began to realize how ungrounded I have been for the majority of my life. You know, I think, like, when you come down as a child, at first you're pretty grounded, but then as life goes on, things happen to you, and you find it more and more and more and more difficult to actually be in this space a lot of the time. And the more you spend out of the space, the more you have things happening to you that you don't like, because you've got no control over what's happening, because you're not there. You're not in your body to make these decisions of what's best for you and what's not best for you, you know. So I think I particularly, if I look back into my childhood as to a point that I would say specifically knocked me out of being grounded, would probably be when I was first started secondary school, maybe. And I actually have dyslexia, and I used to really struggle with my English and with my spelling and things like that. And I really struggled, and I had this teacher who had no apathy, if that's the right word, I'm not quite sure. She just used to punish me, you know, put me under tension and be quite hard with me and just say, oh, you're just lazy, you know, you don't put enough effort and time in, and this and that. And but I did, I just used to struggle, I just used to get my letters mixed up, like my B's and my D's, and I found it really hard, and to the point of where I just used to lie in bed and be too scared and be really scared and have butterflies in my stomach. And a way I've obviously dealt with it was just to just leave and not actually have to deal with it, because it was too difficult to deal with as far as I was concerned. It was, you know, and you have all these things in life. I notice now as an adult that there's certain things that trigger me to become ungrounded, certain situations which will trigger this within me. When I'm running late, that's another time I'll start flapping about and I'll just sort of be ungrounded. And sometimes more than others, it's easy to ground myself. Sometimes I just drink a glass of water and think about my feet, and it's as simple as that. But this morning I was pretty stressed about a few things, and just getting stressed about things, pointing my fingers around, blaming people for my situation. And whenever I'm like that, I do have to take a step back and think, hang on a minute, because I have to take responsibility, don't I? I have to take responsibility for myself. I cannot feel any energy coming out my feet. My head is going in loops, loops and loops. I'm just going around the same things over and over again. And this isn't serving me in any way. This isn't serving the environment in which I live in any way. This isn't serving the planet in any way. This isn't doing anything any good. So I have to make a real big effort today to actually get myself grounded. And the way I did that today is I took my dogs for a walk in the woods. I specifically went to the woods and thought about all the routes when I'm walking around. I was saying mantras to myself, which isn't something that I do often, but with my brain going around and round and round and round in loops, thinking about the same things and going over the same pattern and pointing my finger at people, I'm just like thinking, well, this isn't me. This isn't the sort of person that I truly am. I truly take responsibility for myself. That is the sort of person that I truly am, and that's the sort of person that I enjoy and like being. So it was necessary for me to just repeat a mantra that was put up actually on Facebook today, which was just, I'll probably say it in a different order or whatever, but it was earth, air, fire, water, and space. And so I just kept repeating that over and over and over and over again as I was walking around the woods and thinking about all the roots, thinking about the energy coming through my feet, and just made that really big effort, came back home, drank lots of water, and then I took myself off, had a nice bath, made myself something nice to eat for dinner. And so by the time I sat down and was ready for the radio, to do this radio show and having a chat with everyone, I'm sat here and I can now feel the tingling underneath my feet. I can feel all the energy coming out of my feet, and I feel a lot more happier. I feel happier. I don't feel like pointing my finger at anyone. I don't feel like blaming anyone. I don't feel like moaning. I don't feel off balance. I feel very grounded and very strong within myself and very strong within what I've got to say and what I've got to share. And there's none of this blaming that person or blaming another person. At the way I feel right now, I couldn't blame anyone for anything because I'm connected to the earth. I can feel the strength of the earth. I can feel the strength of myself and the earth within me. So I know I am responsible for myself, and nobody else can get me to where I am at this present moment apart from me. And that's why it's so important to be grounded. And most people don't even realize that they're not grounded. People who I look at and I think, oh my God, that person's totally ungrounded, they think they are grounded. And the reason why they think they are grounded is because they're not coming out with ideas which to me they think are airy-fairy, way out there ideas. But to me, they're real. They're not just airy-fairy ideas. They're reality. There is energy out there. There is other beings out there. There is all this stuff out there. That does not mean that you're not grounded. You know, to do energy work of any type, to do any sort of work, well, you need to be grounded. And so there's all sorts of different ways to be grounded. There's all sorts of different techniques, and it all depends on where you are at that present moment and what is stopping you from being grounded.
You know, it would just be great to hear, you know, other people's experiences and things that they, you know, that they do. It's, you know, these are wonderful things to share, because I was thinking about this idea of you walking in the wood, and I can remember, I mean, one of the things that I have done, and in fact it came to me when I was walking in the woods, and it was a spring day, I'd like to say like today, but we've not really hit the spring yet, I don't think, but it was this kind of, it first came to me about this time of year, maybe about sort of 5 years ago or so, and I was walking in the woods, and I was really, really taken by just the power and the energy that was coming up from, you know, through the ground. And it was really holding me to the ground, and it was holding me to this season. And I really try to sort of weave the rhythm of the seasons. You know, there's so many kind of rhythms that we work within or that we live within. But this was, you know, this was very much, this is the season, and this has been a hard winter. And, you know, there's all this energy and this hope and this, you know, this potential. And there were certain plants that kept coming to the fore. And this is this thing I was, you know, talking about, you know, the relationship that we have with other beings. And I stood there at one point, and I'm really lucky. I've got this wood near me, and it's an old woodland, and it's got a small little stream that runs through it, and it's got very sort of ancient and established trees. And on one side of this bank, there was just all this fresh green nettle growing, and it's absolutely just so green. It was, you know, we haven't seen green for a while usually at this time of year. We have, but it's muted and it's sort of sage coloured, and it's kind of, you know, it just feels quite sort of tired or very, very hardy. But this is this fresh green nettle. And then I saw sort of next to it and growing in amongst it, this beautiful ground ivy. You know, these are very, very, very sort of important herbs therapeutically. But it wasn't their therapeutics that was drawing me. It was their energy. You know, it was they are of this season, this time. And then just across, a little way away from them, was, you know, a whole wood of wild garlic, of ransoms. And the smell and the leaves are like, you know, like velvet, with, you know, these beautiful white flowers. And of course, you know, we haven't really got the leaves on the trees, so the sun is coming through, and this is, you know, early season sunshine. And it was it came to me not to, you know, put these plants together into a spring tonic because of their, you know, their therapeutic properties, because, you know, they are wonderful and they're detoxifying and they're full of minerals and they drive out toxins from the body and they fill us up with energy and, you know, feed our hearts and our souls. It was because it was this energy of spring. And I thought, well, what I'm going to do is make a tincture out of these, and I'm going to put them in together. And, you know, I'm going to try equal parts, even though some of these were, you know, really strong, rather than sort of sitting and thinking, oh, well, if I were, you know, working on, and just thinking, I think it was Anthony had requested some information about how we work with herbal infusions. You know, I wasn't going to say, oh, I'm going to put this much in because I want a certain, you know, a certain strength of sort of, you know, of detoxification in here. What I was going to do was just going to use what I felt when I was putting this together. And I made it this spring tonic, this spring tincture. And I wasn't overly concerned at that point about the different sort of, you know, alcohol levels I was using. I made sure that I had the minimum to extract what I needed and sort of set it aside. And then I started using this tonic, and I was using it, you know, for myself, and I was using it with patients. And it is so pokey and powerful. It really is. These are big, you know, strong, powerful herbs in there. But what I really found was it grounded me back into that rhythm, and it grounded me into the spring. So if I were to take it in winter, or if I were to offer it to, you know, to any of my patients in winter, people suffer from, you know, the seasonal affective disorder. You know, they're just, you know, the winter, especially this winter, is long. It's been long. It's been hard. We had a difficult harvest, a very, very difficult harvest. Harvest failed in this country. You know, our bees are dying. To carry through this winter for this long, and to put something like this, you know, this tincture, this essence of spring, into someone's medicine, into their infusion in the winter, has lifted them. It's helped them. The things like the sadness just hasn't, you know, it hasn't been as apparent. So we can use, you know, we can use ourselves and the environment around us to ground ourselves. But I think as well, there are other things that we can do. And since then, I've used other seasonal tonics, and I have, you know, for some people, it's, you know, some people, it is very, very hard to grasp this whole idea of being grounded. And what I do is I just will kind of weave them gently into the different seasons by making sure that they've got this kind of, you know, this base, this strong base at the bottom of, you know, their mixture or their tea, which is of that season, which kind of hooks them into it, which holds them to the ground, to the roots, you know, into that. And I've found that really very, you know, exciting, I suppose. And it is, you know, again, that of being able to just to trust. I'm not, you know, for a moment suggesting that anyone go and sit next to Hemlock and think, oh, I think I'll just have a bit of an experience with this plant. But, you know, there are many, many things around us that rather than, you know, we need to know what they are. We need to know what the plants are before we start. But, you know, a lot of experience with plants is not necessarily just about ingesting them. You know, to be around roots, to be around the trees, to be around, you know, trees where their roots are going down deep into the earth. You know, we will sit, you know, next to this energy, and we can ask, and then, you know, we can be held within that.
Well, yeah, there's lots of different ways for people to get grounded as well. It's not like you were saying, I walked in the woods today. Not everyone's near woods, or not everyone can relate to the roots. Once with Robo, when I was explaining to him about being grounded, he asked me about different techniques, even though he knows how to ground himself, about different techniques about grounding. And I used an example because he said the old-fashioned way of the roots and that don't really work for him. So I decided to use fiber optic cables stretching into the crystalline center of the earth instead. And that worked really well for him. You know, you have to see what you relate to personally, because this is what we want to be getting people to do, is to think what they relate to, think what works for them, what does make them feel better, what does inspire them to do these things and to connect to the earth and to be grounded, and what ways they do to do that. There's loads of different ways. I use my crystals as well sometimes. I'll use red ones for grounding, or hematite's also one for grounding because it leaves a red trail. So there's all sorts of different ways, isn't there, Terry?
Yeah, tell us a bit more about the crystals. I know we're not specific, but I mean, I have crystals around me, and I will just go into a shop and I will just, you know, I will choose them. But I know for some people that it's a very different sort of experience.
Well, that's what it is, really. You know, you're supposed to be attracted to the crystal which you need the most. So you are obviously going to be the best person to decide whatever you need the most. And if you stood in front of a display of crystals, well, then you go to the one which you get drawn to the most.
I think that I can hear your dog again.
Yeah, I know. He just likes whinging. Yeah, but yeah, so, you know, red colours, they say, is related to your base chakra, and that's the one that you use for grounding.
Gosh, my a friend of mine, I went down to her house and I was a bit spinning out. I was all over the place. And she has great bowls of crystals, and she just sat this crystal in front of me this bowl of crystals in front of me. And I just saw one and I didn't realise what she was doing at all. I was far too away with the fairies. And there was one, and I was really drawn to it. It was just this iridescent blue. It was like, you know, it was like a butterfly's wing. And I picked it up and I just held it for a moment. And it was like, all of a sudden, I just did this great big, like,
well, blue's your throat.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah. Crystals are an amazing thing, and they hold information, don't they? You know, we use crystals. One of the ways that I explain how they work is we use crystals in computers, you know, the silica, and it helps hold the information, and that's they vibrate at different frequencies depending on the actual crystal, and that vibration, by picking it up, it helps you to resonate with that crystal. And a crystal can be programmed. It's important to clear your crystals. You can either do this by putting them out into the sun, or just put them into your hand and just say, I now cleanse this crystal and I reprogram it for love and light and for my highest good, or for the highest good of whoever you're going to who you're going to give it to, if you're going to give it away to somebody. And when I first started learning crystals, I just learned basic techniques with them, like how to clear your chakras, and basically all that is just lining up the rainbow colors, you know, the colors of your chakras, whichever ones you feel drawn to, like maybe jasper, amber, carnelia, I would say that one wrong. rose quartz is a really good one for your heart, you know, love. And then I used to just have another crystal, which is more like a pendulum, and just put it over the top and just say I clear and activate my chakras in the right direction, get them spinning in the right direction to the appropriate time for them open to the appropriate level for me now. And that's how I do it. And that's how I make sure all of my chakras were open. That's how I got taught. Anyway, I don't really sit and do that now. I just do it more with intent. Like you've just got to make sure your intent is clear, really. That they're an amazing, I love them. I absolutely adore crystals. I have them all over my house. They're absolutely amazing things.
Oh, I love them. Beautiful. I do, you know, and I do at different times. I have to say, I do feel drawn to them. But it is, you know, it is one of those, you know, and they're without a doubt, have really helped me. But it is this whole thing again, isn't it? It's like I keep coming back to, you know, every time it's dreadful, every time, you know, we're thinking about, you know, grounding or we're thinking about crystals, I keep coming back with that, yes, and then this happens with herbs and, you know, yeah. And because there's so much kind of crossover and it is this, for me, this kind of, and I was literally thinking, gosh, yes, and what does Stephen say about this? Stephen Bruner, and he says, by having disconnected ourselves emotionally from the earth and plants, we have lost our understanding of these links and mutual relationships. We have facilitated the loss of plant species, but, you know, for that, insert anything. That was me, by the way, not him. And the loss of health in, we have facilitated the loss of plant species, the loss of health in ecosystems and our bodies, and the loss of the sense of who we ourselves are. And for me, that is about, you know, that loss is what happens. I lose something of myself when I'm not grounded. It's not that I'm kind of not there. But it is very much that I don't have that feeling of being held.
No, you don't feel so, when you're not grounded, things don't run as smoothly as when you are grounded, I find as well. I find when I'm grounded, things slot into place a lot more simply, a lot more easier. Things aren't such a struggle. I feel safer in who I am. I feel more confident about who I am. I feel best able to make decisions in my life. And best able to make choices. Being grounded is just, it makes such a massive difference, you know. And when I did start becoming grounded and making a conscious effort to be grounded, that's when I really noticed how ungrounded I have been for so many years. And it was a long time I'd been ungrounded. And it makes a massive difference. And this is one of the most, well, I can't really think of anything more important, really. It's really in taking responsibility for yourself and your health and your well-being. You know, we're very lucky to be on this planet at the moment. We're very fortunate to be on this beautiful planet. It is absolutely beautiful. No matter where you live, there is always something beautiful around you. No matter what you're going through, there's always beautiful things around you. And when you're grounded, you're more able to see them. You're more able to see these beautiful things. And if you can't, well, then you need to just take a step back and think, well, why can't I see these beautiful things? Why is somebody else noticing how beautiful everything is and I'm just seeing everything as not being beautiful? And so I would just advise, like, try doing some grounding techniques and just maybe looking at some flowers or something that you used to find beautiful, you know, nice friend smiles. Anything can just make you smile, can't it? It's so important to smile. I heard on the radio the other day that your average person, well, it smiles between 2 to 11 times a day or something. And I was just thinking, I couldn't imagine having a day where I only smiled twice.
Really? Only twice a day?
You know, what sort of, you know, if that's you out there and you only smile twice a day, well, there's a lot more smiling that needs to be done, isn't it? It uplifts your life, it just uplifts your heart, and just you know, the people around you are loads more welcoming. I always walk down the street and I make an effort of smiling at people. And some people really struggle with this, and it's quite funny. I think, am I going to get one? Am I going to get one? Yay! I got a smile out of that person. And they really didn't want to do it. But then once they smile, they can feel it and they're really happy about it. And they're like, all right, yeah. It's quite mad, really. It's quite amazing. You know, we want a happier world, don't we? We want a happier, nicer world, and we all need to start taking responsibility and taking steps towards doing that. And when you're noticing that you're not feeling happy, then you need to take the steps necessary to make yourself happy, because nobody else can do it for you. And that's why we want to know what's inspiring people out there. We want to hear from you. What is inspiring you? What has inspired you in your life to be where you are, to be doing what you've been you do. And so it's such important information, I feel, that needs to be shared with each other, because there are a lot of people out there that are sad, that are lonely, and that are in really desperate situations, or caught up in arguments, caught up in all this tanglements, and there's no need for it. We need to make the world a better place, and we need to make the world a better place now, starting with us. Starting with you, starting with me.
That's right. I can't argue with that. That was very inspiring, Sarah. That was like a big inspirational speech.
Yeah, well, I like that. I like smiling. I like people smiling. I like people being happy. And, you know, why not? Let's forget about all this horribleness and just start being nice to each other.
Yep. I can't argue with that one, although I do think, you know, I think this whole thing, I think we get trapped, and I think we get, mm-hmm. I do know myself that, in fact, you know, every day I go and I ground myself first thing. But what day didn't I? The day that I was really, really busy, that I had lots of things to do, today. So on the day when I really needed it, I totally forgot to do it. And it's, you know, it's kind of like sabotaging yourself. The things which you need, you know, that you need to be grounded for, to be able to kind of, you know, to maneuver your way through something like a day like I've had today, you need to be grounded. But that's the thing that kind of, for me, I immediately forget to do, and I have to work on that, I have to say. It's yeah.
Well, we both have, haven't we? I told you about my day. My day started out terribly. Like, oh, no. Where's it going to go from here? And then so I knew that I had to do something about it, you know, and just take the time out for myself. And this is what a lot of people don't often do sometimes. They get so wrapped up in their normal everyday-to-day life, they don't actually take that little bit of time out for themselves. And, you know, just a little bit of time, it's all it takes. It's just run yourself a nice bath. Actually, to making the conscious effort that you are doing this for yourself. Is that, you know, I know a lot of people that live on their own and they won't cook themselves a nice dinner. And I'm like, well, why won't you cook yourself a nice dinner? You know, you deserve a nice dinner. Just because you haven't got somebody to eat with doesn't mean that you shouldn't eat nice food. What, you know, cook yourself something nice. I always do. I always cook myself nice dinners.
I do like tasty things. I really like tasty things. I am mindful of the time, and I know that Sarah, you were going to say stuff about this Facebook thing you're doing, and I'm also mindful that someone has asked a question, which unless you want to answer, which seems to be about herbal infusions and stuff like that, but I can, yes, with my previous advisors, I'm not going to talk about therapeutics. I will say on this one that Anthony has, and I did refer to him earlier on, so it's only fair that I answer his question. He was saying about creating a herbal fusion and that contains a number of herbs. Are these herbs always used in equal amounts, or do the amounts of the herbs used vary? Well, they vary, and they vary dependent on what you want them to do. And the strength of them, because depending on when herbs, you know, where herbs are picked, when they're picked, how old they are, what kind of year it was, the experience of the herb, the different kind of energies and chemical constituents in them that come to the fore will vary. And that's why it's really important that you kind of know your herbs, because you do want to create a balance. But within this kind of balancing, there are wonderful herbs you can use, like licorice or borage, which will help you with that. You know, if you are slightly off, or you just feel that they're not meeting each other, they're not synergizing properly, you would maybe add one of these balancing herbs. So yes. So that's that. So I hope that answers your question. It probably poses more questions than it answers. Herbs usually are like that. But get online and really, you know, you can get to grips with something like this. It's a whole journey. Right, Sarah, over to you for the Facebook.
I was just going to say your website would probably help him with a lot of that, though, won't it? Because your blog website, The Herbarium, it's on the Dark City Radio host page. And we'll put a link to it up on YouTube again. It's The Herbarium, and that has got so much useful information about herbs. Anyone who's interested in herbs and first-hand blog, basically, of what people have used, like tinctures and infusions and things like that.
But it's more about, sorry, Sarah, I should say, it's less about therapeutics and more about how we make things. So if you're looking about information on things like on therapeutics, and this is a kind of therapeutic kind of question rather than how to actually physically make something, you would be better, you know, looking at something like you know, David Hoffman or you know, some other books. What I could do, if people are interested, is do a list of books that I think are really helpful for explaining sort of how we go about things like this, and how people can do it themselves. They're really enabling books. So I can do that.
I'm just really conscious of time. I know that we've only got two minutes left. So what we are going to do is we're going to set up a Facebook group. It's going to be the same as our show. But what we're setting it up for is so that you can put down what inspires you and we can put down what inspires us. And hopefully this will just be a place where everyone can come together, as well as on the radio show, and talk about what inspires them and what's inspired them to do the things that they do and what works for them and what hasn't worked for them. Because what hasn't worked for you a lot of the time also is a great teacher, isn't it? So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So, thank you.